If you're purchasing a new home or refinancing your existing home, then you need to call Team Hochberg, your trusted local lender, 855-563-2843, or visit 56diva.com. Lower.com, Equal Housing Lender, MLS 112-4061.
All right, break out the disco ball half a century after the drug-fueled, DJ-driven, glamour-drenched musical phenomenon of disco was born at a New York City loft party. Disco's musical and fashion influences live on today in popular culture. The new book, Disco, Music, Movies, and Mania, Under the Mirror Ball, is an entertaining yet serious tribute to the overlooked art form of disco. Painting a vivid portrait of this provocative era, author Frank DeCaro explores the cultural importance of disco and how the music and dance that originated in Black and Latin clubs of the day became a mainstream phenomenon, changing our culture along the way. Frank went to school here in Chicago at Northwestern University. He's also known for his work on The Daily Show, which he appeared as a contributor from the 90s through the 2000s. He's a journalist and entertainment guru. He is Frank DeCaro. Frank, we finally speak.
Yes, I'm a guru. I love it. I'm very happy. I feel better now. I'm a guru. I love Chicago so much, and I get back every chance I get. I love it so much. I had so much fun at Northwestern with my fake ID going to what was considered the Studio 54 of Chicago. I went to the Bistro, which is long gone, but it was 50-cent drink night on Thursdays, and we still made it to class on Fridays. So I don't know how we did that with our fake IDs, but it was very fun, and it did certainly influence this book on disco, because that's where I consumed it most and have the best memories.
Well, I was going to say, disco, you know, and that era just runs through your blood, doesn't it?
Yeah, disco really is a part of our lives to this day, only now you're hearing it in supermarkets when you're picking up, you're listening to more as you buy a box of pasta in the in the macaroni aisle there, so it's a little different setting, but the music is there, and it's really part of one of the reasons I want to write the book was sort of to help it be disco, be part of the American music continuum instead of this sort of weird thing that stuck out that some people adored and other people hated. It's just really, you know, as much a part of things as any other genre of music, and was just as influential on, which we didn't really hear about this at the time. We just heard, after disco, disco's dead. But it really influenced hip-hop. It influenced new wave.
Yes, it
and
did.
Certainly EDM. I mean, electronic dance music. You couldn't have Dua Lipa without Donna Summer, or Lizzo's About Damn Time without, you know, the entire chic canon, I'm glad to help sort of restore the luster to disco, because, Lord, I remember when you didn't use that word, it was a dirty word, and, disco was uncool, and at least in some circles, but a lot of people still always loved it, and I was one of those people, so that's one of the reasons I wanted to write the book.
Now, it's funny you say that. I remember in the 70s my grandfather going to a music store, might have been Musicland, and asked them, I want to buy a couple albums for my son for my grandson for his birthday, and I'm opening up the two albums that he bought, and one was Studio 54 and one was Boston. So two very different music genres, but I still have that album somewhere. But what is it in a song, Frank, that immediately identifies it as disco to you?
Well, I think there are two things and two ways to look at it. One was that four on the floor thump, 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 mm-hmm. thump, track that was going on there. And I think that was musically what was a signature. But I think more importantly, I think disco is best classified as danceable songs that are about hope and inclusion and diversity, and we're all going to the party, everyone's invited, you're going to feel better after you dance to this song. The positivity of it, to me, is what unites all of the songs. And whether it's Gloria Gaynor singing I Will Survive, mm-hmm. or, you know, Chic singing Good Times. But it really it helps you get through your day. It tells you your life is going to be better. And it, and as I said, it tells you everyone's invited to the party. And I think that for a while there, I was joking. I said it sounds like a Kamala Harris campaign speech set to music. You know, it really was. We're not going back. We're going forward. Know, and so it was very much about hope and positivity. And I think, you know, there are songs that scratch the disco itch from much later, you know, that I include in the book because, you know, thematically, it makes sense. I mean, it's a song like Flowers, Gloria Gaynor called it the I Will Survive of the 2020s, you know, and it is. I mean, Miley Cyrus's song sort of ushers that notion of,
yeah,
I can get through a breakup and buy my own flowers. And that is the same sentiment as I Will Survive. And so 50 years later, we still need to hear some of the same messages. And that's what I think really defines disco, even more than the thump, 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 thump. Although, you know, I think if disco is a good disco song, is if you put it on and you can't help but move, then it's a good disco song.
God.
You know, you should definitely be able to have to or need to dance while you hear the song.
But what put disco on the map, really? Was it the clubs or was it radio? Was it, you know, what really got it out there and really made it a thing?
What was odd about disco was it was the first time that music, that hits were made in a way that was different than, oh, we'll try and get them on the radio and make them a hit. People were going to clubs and hearing songs they didn't hear anywhere else. And then they would call radio stations and ask for that song. And that's how hits were being made in the mid to late 70s. And that was revolutionary. Nobody ever took radio's place before in hit making. And so people would, you know, would apparently they would say they might go to three clubs and they'd hear the same song in every club and they're like, oh, this song is great. And there it was. I think the thing that made disco break out from the underground, because it really was a product of the queer community and the people and people of color and clubs catering to those groups, that when it broke out from there into the mainstream, I think so much of it has to do with the arrival of the movie Saturday Night Fever. And everybody decided they wanted to either be Tony Manero or sleep with Tony Manero or take dating tips from Tony Manero or fashion tips from him. And John Travolta's character, I think, brought disco to the mainstream as much as anything did. And suddenly you had discos in every hotel ballroom, every little space people could install a dance floor and some lights and people went crazy. And it's not like that was the first disco movie by any means, but it really was the one that brought it to the world. And people who had been into disco since about 1970, before the word was even coined,
right,
by the time Saturday Night Fever showed up years later, they kind of were like, oh, great. You know, this this is going to... There goes our good thing, you know, and everyone's going to know about it.
Yeah, it's funny.
And it did come to pass like that. And it's interesting because when disco, you know, when disco died, you know, or was murdered, however you want to look at it, there's a documentary that's called just that. Disco didn't die, it was murdered. When it did go, it went right back to the underground and the music. You know, one of the DJs from Studio 54 that I interviewed talked about the arrival of house music. And he said, disco was dead and what came along but disco? And he's like, and it's true. I mean, house really was disco music. And it just was disco at its purest, most pared down form. And it really was what disco had been before the arrival of the mainstream. So it's an interesting story that we didn't really hear in this, you know, we're only now hearing the story in this way. And that's why I think I we finally can see it for what it's really, you know, what it's worth. And I think that it's not just Disco Duck, you know.
Yeah.
You listen to something like Donna Summer, and I like the song Disco Duck. I don't mean to make fun of it, really. But when you listen to something like Donna Summer's I Feel Love, apparently Brian, back in the day, early, you know, mid-70s, Brian Eno came in with a copy of it and handed it to David Bowie and said, this is what the future sounds like. And what I marvel at is 50 years later, almost, we're saying, this is what the future sounds like. A whole genre doesn't suck when you, quote unquote, when you can have a record that still sounds so modern and so futuristic half a century later. So I think we have to appreciate the most artful of disco, along with the crazy, silly bandwagon Ethel Merman disco album kind of disco.
And I want to talk about that. Frank's latest book is called Disco Music, Movies, and Mania Under the Mirror Ball. And there's more with Frank after this on 720 WGN. Frank DeCaro is joining us. His new book is Disco Music, Movies, and Mania Under the Mirror Ball. You opened the book about disco demolition. It happened right here in Chicago. Steve Dahl, Gary Meyer were at the helm of it all. It got out of control quite quickly. They're revered, very much beloved radio hosts here. But you thought it was important to tell that story because it really didn't kill disco, so to speak.
Well, that is the thing that the story that I wanted to tell. And the book does begin at Disco Demolition Night. And I mean, I was struck by the visuals of that. And I don't think they realized that we would be talking about it all these years later, and also how awful it kind of looks. It's very militaristic. It's very fascistic looking, and I think the visuals are really the problem. And also, I think that nobody told us after that event that disco was going to continue. We were told, no, disco is dead. And that's why I wanted to sort of start the book at this absolute low point in disco's history, and then sort of prove that it continues. Because, you know, as someone in the book says, what do kids talk about today? Diversity. And it's like, and also, the other thing that is mentioned in the book, and I thought this was a great point, because of being able to stream everything and be able to download everything, no genre is any better than another. And that, I think, is one of the reasons we can tell the story of disco's survival, despite all of it. And the guys who were telling the story about disco's death were invested in disco's death. They didn't tell us that never happened in Australia, that never happened in Europe. That there were new wave artists like Duran Duran saying, you know, our music is disco for people who have more on their minds than dressing up and going out. And the whole music of the 80s, all of that danceable pop that we listened to,
yes, pulled
and
out of
continue
that.
To listen to,
yeah.
Came out of disco.
Mm-hmm.
And we were sort of meant to think disco was this awful thing that happened, and it was like a cancerous growth, and then we cut it out, and we're never going to talk about it again. And that was the real lie, you know. It was that it had gone away. And also, I do think that a lot of people's problem with disco wasn't the music, but who was listening to it. And it was women. It was gay people. It was people of color. And I think that that's often what people didn't like about disco. And you know what? But to be fair, the white straight rock and roll guys really were being displaced. So I understand the anger because they couldn't get record sales at that point.
Yeah, but you know what? That happened. Cool. That happened in the 60s with Frank Sinatra. Like, he was like, okay, where are these kids going? Like, what happened to my music? And rock and roll and the Beatles and the Stones took over for him. So there is an evolution of music, and there,
yeah,
there's good, yeah, right.
I think that disco would, it was sort of, it's more the idea that it wasn't part of the continuum. That was the story that wasn't told, you know? And meanwhile, you've got disco songs in the Library of Congress now, you know, as culturally significant. And you hear YMCA by everyone on every part of the political spectrum.
Yeah.
People play YMCA.
Yeah.
So it's an odd sort of history for a genre of music. And I don't really remember any other time. I mean, people might have said, oh, Sinatra's music is square when rock and roll came
right.
in. But there wasn't this vehemence that it's horrible music. And that was what we were told disco was. And so that's why somebody said it was a revisionist. My book was a revisionist history. It's not revisionist. It's just telling the truth. You know, it's just saying, well, it may not have dominated the pop charts as the word disco anymore, but it became house music and so many other great things, and it's in the very DNA of all that we listen to now.
Well, and everybody tried to get into disco too, like we talked about.
Oh,
Frank Sinatra.
God, yes.
Frank Sinatra used to try to get into rock and roll, and he did some albums that, you know, didn't do as well, of course, but you were talking about the example, best example, the Ethel Merman disco album. And I saw video on it on YouTube the other day, singing some ragtime band in a disco while she's dancing. It's a lot to take in.
Oh, my God. Okay, I have had the Ethel Merman disco album since it came out. I have had it on vinyl, cassette, CD, you know, downloaded it onto, you know, my iPod. Now I can listen to it, you know, on the streaming service. But I cannot get through the whole album, okay? And I wrote the book on disco, and I still can't get through the whole album. It is the strangest artifact of the disco era. And it's because she's just kind of singing the way she always did.
Yes.
And there's all this thump-thump going on behind her. But it's funny, you know, you go to see Ben Platt, the guy from Dear Evan Hansen, in concert, and while you're waiting for the show to start, there's Ethel Merman disco album song. You go see one of the hottest shows on Broadway is Oh Mary, and while you're sitting there waiting for it, there's an Ethel Merman disco song. So young people, you know, these are people in their 30s, and they're listening to, you know, they've caught wind of it. But it was the weirdest thing. But everyone did disco. That was the thing. There's a chapter in the book called Play That Funky Music, White Boy. And it just struck me funny how many people got into it, including, you mentioned Frank Sinatra, or we mentioned him. There are two disco songs by Frank Sinatra that you can download on iTunes. And I think it's hilarious. It was sort of from the vaults, but he did do some songs. Johnny Mathis has a version of Begin the Begin that's kind of amazing, but it's a disco version of that.
Wild.
If you start to look at people who jumped on the disco bandwagon, not just someone like Cher, you know, who had a huge hit with Take Me Home, but the number of people, it was like if you didn't have some sort of disco record out, you know, there's a Wayne Newton has a Rudolph, this Jingle Bell Hustle, that's what it's called.
Good word.
Okay, you know, it's deranged, but you have to sort of like the, you know, I always tell people you have to like the, you know, the Velveeta cheese along with the caviar. It can't, you know, you have to of disco, you know, and I think it's good to like all of it.
Frank's latest book is called Disco Music, Movies, and Mania Under the Mirror Ball, and there's more with Frank after the news next. Frank DeCaro is joining us. His new book is Disco Music, Movies, and Mania Under the Mirror Ball. So much in this book about the history, but you also got some really great interviews in this book as well.
Oh, it was amazing, the people I got to talk to. Somebody asked me recently, said, well, how did you get to these people? Well, I was doing a radio show on Sirius for many years,
mm-hmm.
and Felipe Rose from the Village People, the original Native American character from Village People, would call in and he would do his woo 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 noise that he did, and you know, always.
Okay.
And that's how we knew it was really him, you know.
Yeah, right.
And so he would call in often. Well, I became friends with him, so I called him, and he was first. And then I became friends with a construction worker through social media after that. And then Felipe said, "Oh, you should talk to my friend Gloria." And I was like, "Gaynor?" And he said, Yes. And so he got me a number for a person who was repping her, and she was amazing. He said, oh, yeah, Gloria said just call her.
Oh, that's so great. That's great.
So I called her, and that happened. And then little by little, somebody said to me, you know, I'm friends with Corey Day from Dr. Buzzard's original Savannah Band. And I said, no. And he said, oh, yeah, here's her number. So one thing led to another, and I got to talk to amazing people. France Jolie, this was a mind-blower. She had that song, Come to Me, which is one of the sexiest songs. She was 15 when she sang that song. Wow. None of us knew that. It's like,
yeah, no.
You know, she was a, we thought it was this mature woman because of the voice, and yet here was this kid. And she had amazing stories, and so, yeah, so one thing led to another, and there were people I saw. Thank heaven for social media, because you really can sort of find folks that that you're dying to talk to. But I went right through to, you know, I talked to people like Chris Franz from the Tom Tom Club, because I thought he would have an interesting perspective coming out of the punk world with Talking Heads, and he did. And I talked to Erasure's Andy Bell, because he, you know, not only did he do covers of ABBA, but he and Katie Lang sang a cover of Enough is Enough, that Donna Summer, Barbara Streisand song that is one of, I always say, I think it's the gayest disco song ever, because of Katie Lang and Andy Bell doing Barbara Streisand and Donna Summer. I mean, that, if you're, you could, I think if, for the right person, you could become gay with one listen. You know, I do think that could happen with that song. But it's kind of amazing to me that they, you know, that they have, ABBA wouldn't be in the culture as much without Erasure, because that well predated the Mamma Mia movies. I don't think we'd have Mamma Mia without Erasure.
Yeah, you know what I was going to say, when you talk about movies, and you know, the movies, television had some influence in disco too. What were the top three films to you of the disco era that really highlighted the music and did it in a positive way?
I think if you go back and watch Saturday Night Fever, I think it will absolutely blow your mind, because John Travolta's performance and everyone's performances in the film are incredible, but it's really gritty and it's very 70s, and it's not the same feeling you get just watching the dance sequences on YouTube. You know, mm-hmm. it's a much harsher picture about class and striving and wanting to get ahead and be better than you were supposed to be, given your surroundings growing up. So it's a tough one. But Saturday Night Fever is the most, it's the best by far of any disco movie. Then you get to Thank God It's Friday, which marked the movie mm-hmm. debut of Donna Summer. And as an actress, she was a singer. Okay, so
yeah.
she's not the greatest actress.
No.
However, the movie is very fun, and it's got amazing people in it who are just on the rise. Jeff Goldblum is in it as a sort of lascivious lounge lizardy type who owns the disco. Deborah Winger is in it. You need to see Thank God It's Friday. And the guy, there's a guy who is very much a part of the Golden Girls canon, who is in the movie. He had two roles on Golden Girls, and it's I can't think of Enrique Mas. That was one of them. That now I can think of it. Anyway, he played Enrique Mas, but he plays a guy who's he plays the leather man who's obsessed with dancing, and he's got a dance number on top of the roofs of cars in the parking lot, and that's amazing. And he's got the movie's famous line, and I can't say it on the radio, but he says, you know, he said, it's all about dancing, everything else is BS, and he screams it as he's dancing. Anyway, so that's one. And then the other one is Can't Stop the Music, which is the Village People biopic that came out in 1980 and is credited with killing the disco genre and also perhaps the movie musical, although it did keep going forward. But there's so many others. I mean, there's Xanadu, there's Skate Town USA. There's an early Harvey Keitel movie called That's the Way of the World with Earth, Wind, and Fire. They're all sort of out there to be discovered. There's one called Disco Fever, and there's a disco on a plane in it, and it's hilarious. It's as campy and silly as could be. But Fabian is the star of it, the 50s star Fabian. is having a disco moment in that movie. But and then I don't even know if that's in print anymore.
But I'm not sure, but
you can find it online. There's even a disco porn film called called The Nightbird, and it'll blow your mind. That's all I can say. it's at XXX rated, and it is hilarious.
Well, then there was online. But then there was Solid Gold that aired here on WGN TV, Dance Fever. Sure. So TV got into it too. They both encompassed the era.
Well, TV was what brought it into our homes. I mean, that, you know, if you were living in the suburbs and you were never, you know, or were too young to go to discos, you could still partake in the disco movement by tuning into Solid Gold or Dance Fever or Soul Train if you were actually cool. And it did that. I mean, it sort of helped us all fall in love with disco because it really was everywhere. If you turned on the Jeffersons, there was a disco episode. If you turned on What's Happening, there was an episode of about disco. Barnaby Jones. Okay. Here's 70-something Buddy Ebsen doing the hustle with a girl like a third of his age.
Nobody wants to see that.
Oh no, you do. You might want to need a barf bag while you're watching it, but you do want to see it. Believe me, it's hilarious. And there was, you know, Charlie's Angels. There are two disco episodes. Wonder Woman had a disco episode.
Oh my gosh!
Family had a disco. It's hilarious. It was, and the most famous one was WKRP in Cincinnati, where Johnny Fever gets a job hosting a TV show and then finds out, even though he's a dyed-in-the-wool rock and roller, that it's a disco program. And it sort of causes him to have multiple personality disorder, which I think is hilarious. It's called it's Dr. Fever and Mr. Tide. It's a two-part episode where he goes
I love
disco
it.
And then finally breaks free of it and goes back to rock and roll. So
I love it. Frank DeCaro, his latest book is called Disco, Music, Movies, and Mania Under the Mirror Ball. Frank, you are so passionate about everything you write and everything you do. It's a great book. It's a deep dive. Congratulations, and let's talk again when your next project surfaces.
Thank you. As soon as I figure out what it's going to be, I'll let you know.
All right. Thank you, Frank. Appreciate it.